reach out to us. Good morning, everyone. Before we begin the council meeting, this is a day of national sadness. I want to turn this over to Commissioner Saltzman, who's our commissioner in charge of the Bureau of Fire Rescue and Emergency Services for the City of Portland, and therefore the steward of firefighters here in our city.
Thank you, Mayor. Earlier this week, Arizona lost 19 of the most skilled firefighters from Prescott while battling a wildfire raging through the small town of Yarnell. It's a tragedy in the greatest order, and our sympathy goes to the firefighters, their families, the cities of Prescott and Yarnell, and the state of Arizona. We cannot even begin to imagine their sorrow and how overwhelmed they must feel. This is every fire department's nightmare. While there is a science to fire, like most things in nature, it is willful and unpredictable. Firefighters go on duty each day knowing that the work is dangerous, the risks are high, but so is the return, helping people and our community stay safe. These hotshots were the best of the best. They are always forever in our hearts, and their sacrifice will not be forgotten. We will now have a moment of silence.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you all. So welcome to the July 3rd meeting of the Portland City Council. We have an item of business to take up before we get to the council calendar, which is that every 6 months we elect a president of the council, and that action is before us this morning. And by rotation, the next president of the council will be Commissioner Fritz. Can we take a motion on that? It's been a while. It's been 6 months. A motion, please, to appoint Commissioner Fritz.
So moved. Second.
Any discussion? And a roll call.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Novick.
Aye.
Fritz.
Well, this is a great honor. It does happen by rotation, but I know that my mother's going to be very pleased when I tell her about it. Aye. Fish.
Congratulations.
Hales. Aye.
And we will be in good hands. Aye. Thank you. Okay. You get to deliver that news to your mother.
Right.
That's right.
Yes.
There we go. Okay. We have some communications items. Just an announcement that the order of voting rotates every 6 months as well. So now the order of rotation begins with Commissioner Saltzman, right? Starting on July 3rd today, the order will be Saltzman, Novick, Fritz, Fish, and the mayor. And that's our order for the next 6 months, in case you wonder why the clerk calls it in that order. 3 months.
Doesn't the rotation do every 3 months?
Does it?
Each quarter.
Sorry, every 3 months. Okay. So that is our order for this next quarter. So let's take up communications items, please.
But first we need to take the roll.
You're right. Thank
you. Saltzman?
Here.
Novick?
Here.
Fritz?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Hales?
Here. Thank you. Okay. Now we'll take up communications items.
Item 651, request of Lightning to address council regarding Wapato Care Center for the homeless.
Good morning.
My name is Lightning. Reducing homelessness in Portland, Multnomah County is the right thing to do. Recent data suggests homelessness is increasing at a rate of 5% or greater each year. If homelessness increases, could this lead to various business revenue decreasing? There is a large number of people sleeping in front of City Hall on cardboard or under tarps. Could this also possibly affect the overall revenue of City Hall? Absolutely. When homelessness increases, chances are City Hall revenue will decrease. And after all, did not City Hall experience a budget shortfall? If increased homelessness were to create one unsatisfied person when visiting City Hall, that person may very well tell as many as 10 or 20 of their friends, and that may very well create substantial revenue losses, not only for City Hall, but also existing businesses throughout Portland, Multnomah County. City Hall is not immune to the revenue losses created by homelessness. The only solution is housing, housing, housing. And yes, by reducing homelessness, it can stimulate the local economy and produce positive gains for City Hall, local businesses, and more importantly, improve the lives of the homeless. Let me read a quote by Michelle Obama. As you make your way through life, who are you pulling up behind you? And as long as you are pulling somebody up behind you, you're doing the right thing. Reducing homelessness is the right thing to do. We cannot begin to accept good people sleeping on cardboard or under tarps throughout the city. Again, my communication is on WAPATO, the Future Care Center for the Homeless, mental health services, drug and alcohol services, job transition services, long-term, safe, permanent housing provided, and various expansion possibilities. WAPATO is the right thing to do. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Okay, next one, please.
Item 652, request of Jim Wittenberg to address council regarding budget and state of commissioners in representing the public.
Hey, good news. Be careful, but that's good news.
You need your walker. You should be using the walker.
First of all, I know each of you. At one time or another, I've met the entire council, and I really like all of you. But I'm going to say some things today that you probably won't like. The first thing on my agenda is the problems with the budget this year. I've underlined a few items that are in front of you, and they probably will be the second page that you'll see in the handout. On the handout to Portland City Council, South Waterfront District Development, this was written 10 years ago, but as I'm packing to leave Portland, I found that it applied just as well today as it did 10 years ago. So now that's 60 years ago when I moved to Portland. And secondly, it's also at the end of it, it's Vancouver, British Columbia. That was omitted by the typist that did this. I live in the 18th Avenue Peace House. I have since I had the stroke and the heart attack that followed it. I have a stent put in me, which is all metal, which is nice. I live at the Peace House, and the people that are reprising there, because you get the wrong idea about the place, there's a retired doctor and a social worker living there. There are two attorneys living there now. They're retired from the state of Oregon. And there are also a minister, which is a Methodist minister, and Pat Swibert, who's a nurse there, who took care of me when I couldn't walk or lift, move my right hands or talk very well. They picked me up one day when I fell and put me back in bed. So it's nice that the two have battered shot. I put in here a list of attendees at my 74th birthday party, because I thought that you should know that some of the people that attended will be a part of the Peace House community from this point on. And we talked quite a bit about you guys while they were there, not necessarily to Amanda Fritz, but the two of them, Don and Karen and Brian and Barbara, were classmates of mine in pharmacy school back in the 60s. And then I had Bob Grant down lower, who was a classmate in high school when I was there. On the thing that I want you to focus on, which I think most is, I saw it last night, the hardest thing for us to do is to say no to power. No to power. And it's on MSNBC, in case you want to watch it the 5 o'clock news on this First Presbyterian Church piece. I just found it as I was packing back in 2000. It talked about that, and it talked about the fact that Milton Friedman was an economist, and the liberal economist said, "Is that the end of it?"
Jim, sorry, it is, okay. But we make sure we've got copies of your document, okay?
He says inconveniently honest. That's what we all should be, is inconveniently honest to each other, and we should say no to power when it's wrong. Yeah. I brought some things about homelessness together. I see this here when it's getting back to those programs, and most of the stuff is in here. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you. Good to see you. Thank you. Keep getting better.
I think I will.
Thank you. Thanks. All
right. 6:53, request of Allison Koffenbarger to address council regarding use of empty buildings for emergency shelter for women and domestic violence survivors.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm. I don't think we can change it.
You can come.
You can come up together.
Okay. That's fine.
Thank you.
You bet.
You bet. Three parts, so that one would begin and give us 9 whole minutes.
Come on up together if you want. That's fine.
Come on up, cohorts.
Thanks.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Cynthia Gilbranson. This is my associate, Miss Stephanie Opaka, and Miss Allison. I can't pronounce her last name. The demographics profile of the average homeless woman has shifted dramatically in recent years. We are middle-aged grandmothers who find ourselves plunged into the nightmare of homelessness, learning to survive on the streets of Portland. The questions of how, what, and why are basically the same. Unemployment, divorce, spousal abuse, etc. No matter what the reason, we are here now in ever-increasing numbers, adding to the existing homeless population. That of the chronically homeless, such as the mentally unstable, alcoholism, drug abuse, former felons, and the ever-present modern-day hobos, now known as the travelers, etc. The pre-existing homeless women that the social service organizations and shelters were designed and geared towards giving aid to are finding themselves at maximum capacity, trying to stretch overstressed budgets to meet the needs of this massive influx of today's homeless woman. In the first 24 hours on the streets, we find ourselves facing the violent horrors of sexual assault, physical assault, robbery, etc. Without shelter or food, walking the dark streets alone and frightened, being chased from businesses and doorways, harassed by a hostile police force. Our cries for help are being met with the malignancy of apathy. If we are lucky, we are adopted by a street family who will guide us through the maze of programs that can give us real help, show us where the soup kitchens are and where we can shower and warm up, and get put on the waiting list for a bed at the shelters. This street family also provides a bit of safety and protection from the vultures who would do us harm and the predators who hunt the streets, preying on the weak and or strays. I would now like to turn this over to my associate, Stephanie.
Thank you. Morning.
Thank you. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Stephanie Opoka, and I'm here today to continue the discussion on the lack of shelters for women in Portland and Multnomah County. The increasingly street violence has only recently begun to be addressed by the staff at SAFES in the past 2 weeks, issuing whistles and self-defense classes. These are geared more towards being held at PTA meetings and not designed for homeless women, but it is a step in the right direction. As of 2013, there is only one women's shelter that is open for day use from 7 a.m. to 11 p.m., as well as short-term 30-day sheltering at night year-round. As the number of homeless women keeps growing every day, most are afraid to come forward for fear they will be shunned by society. The wait list is long and can be up to a month to get a bed. The men in our community have three options for year-round services. The city possesses many buildings that sit empty and are not being used in any way, shape, or form. I know in these economic hard times it is difficult for the people of this city and county, as well as its leaders, to try and take on the burden of running a shelter. What I propose to you is this.
take use one of the unused smaller buildings that has at least two bathrooms, one dorm-like area where up to 75 women can put a sleeping bag down from 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. year-round. To help the cost of running the electric, water, sewer, and garbage to the companies that run them, ask them for assistance and possible donation or pro bono, if you will. Staff it with volunteers from the city and community. I believe most people can spare one or two evenings a month, whether it be a stay-at-home person, a doctor or lawyer, or even our own mayor. What I propose to you is not impossible to achieve, but will take time and hard work from all involved. We need to take care of our mothers, daughters, aunts, and grandmothers. I know if it was yours out on the street and alone and scared, you'd do everything in your power to help save them, and that's what I'm doing here today. Please help it make reality. Thank you for your time and patience.
Thank you. Thanks.
We now go to Allison.
Thanks, Stephanie and Cindy. I'm Allison Koffenbarger, and I'm a community organizer, and I've also worked in women's shelters and services for about 8 years here in Portland. And I'm here today to address the council about the increasingly urgent need for more emergency shelter and safety for women, including transgender persons experiencing homelessness and or domestic violence, as they often co-occur in the Portland area. Also, Mayor Hales and city commissioners were emailed on June 6th requesting the use of one of the many empty buildings in downtown Portland for this purpose. We also held a peaceful rally here at City Hall on June 14th and had the opportunity to speak with Commissioners Fritz and Saltzman. We appreciate you taking the time to hear our concerns, but we are still waiting for an answer. And the women in Christ who are in crisis do not have time to wait. It is for them a matter of safety, physical and emotional health, and for some, a matter of life or death. At this time, houseless women and domestic violence survivors in need of safety are more often than not without any immediate options. With the closing of the seasonal winter shelter program for women, which sheltered 70 women, there is one year-round emergency shelter for unhoused women to sleep at night in Portland, but it is currently not functioning as an emergency shelter as it has a wait list. I called yesterday, and there were 91 women on the wait list. And there are 50 beds, so 50 of the 91 women waiting will get a bed at 11 in the morning, and this shelter is not able to intake throughout the night, which would be the normal purpose of emergency shelter. As noted, at a crisis line training, a woman has a 50% chance of sexual assault her first night on the street. In addition, given the cost of homelessness, including police and other emergency services, a willingness of the city to fund a year-round, very basic shelter would, in the end, be more cost-effective than the current state of shelter for unhoused women. The state of shelter space for domestic violence survivors is also very grim. There were zero beds open in area domestic violence shelters when I called the Portland Women's Crisis Line yesterday. The Crisis Line also reported that over the last 3 months, only 18% of callers pre-screened and placed on a callback list were able to get into a domestic violence shelter, and the average time on the callback list was 51 days. Of 49 people, 24 were identified by an advocate as being in a high lethality situation. I think we can do better than this. We ask that a precedent be set that no more women and transgender persons experiencing homelessness or domestic violence be turned away and denied their most basic human rights. This, of course, should extend to all persons. I am part of a group working specifically for solutions for the crisis and services for women and domestic violence shelters. A short-term solution to this would be the use of an empty building. In the Portland area, a long-term solution would be to fund agencies that provide the winter shelters with year-round space for that purpose, and to also increase funding to current existing domestic violence services to increase shelter bed space.
Thank you very much. Thanks for your advocacy.
We would like to thank you.
Thank you for your listening.
Thanks very much. So let's see. We have no requests, I believe, for items to be pulled from the consent calendar. Is that right? And therefore, we'll take a roll call on the consent calendar.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Novick.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Hales.
Aye. And time's certain.
Item 656. Tentatively deny appeal of Northwest District Association and uphold the Design Commission's decision to conditionally approve the application for the Riverscape Apartments, a four-building complex to be located on the east side of Northwest Front Avenue between Northwest 16th and 18th Avenues.
This is for the adoption of findings.
So today, what would be appropriate? We have the findings in front of you that staff have provided, and staff is here if you need to have any questions about them. At this point, if you do not, it would be appropriate to move that the council deny the appeal and uphold the decision of the Design Commission and adopt the findings.
Okay.
So moved.
Second.
Any further discussion or questions for staff? Then roll call on denying the appeal and approving the findings.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Novick.
Aye.
Fritz.
This was a good discussion. I'm glad the appellants brought these concerns to us. There are circumstances on this site that preclude some of the design elements that look onto the river, and therefore I support the motion. Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Hales.
I want to thank the staff for good work, both the Bureau of Development Services and the City Attorney's Office on this case and others. Thank you. Aye. And now we have item 657.
657. Tentatively consider the proposal of Black Back Bridge Lofts, LLC, and uphold with modifications the recommendation from the hearings officer for approval with conditions to change the comprehensive plan map designation from medium density multi-dwelling to central residential and the zoning map designation from R1 multi-dwelling residential to RX central residential with a design overlay at the southeast corner of North Williams Avenue and Northeast Fremont Street.
Okay, similar situation.
So on this one, you have two actions today, so Sue will also read the second. But the first one, I believe we typically just have a motion to accept the report on the first one. The second one is an ordinance because it's a comp plan, so you would then take a roll call vote on the second
right.
item.
Okay. I would move to accept the report.
Second.
Any further discussion? A roll call on 657.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Novick.
Aye.
Fritz.
No.
Fish. Hales.
Aye. Okay, and now item 658, the comp plan amendment. Second reading.
Amend the comprehensive plan map designation and change zoning of property at the southeast corner of North Williams Avenue and North Fremont Street at the request of Backbridge Lofts, LLC.
Second reading and roll call.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Novick.
Aye.
Fritz.
I believe this is very unfortunate. The neighbors made a compelling case. This is not downtown. The magnitude of this change does not support the nature and purpose of the Albina plan. It's not the central city plan. This corridor should not be about creating another downtown with 85-foot tall buildings. I do applaud the use of the lower floor if it is used as stated for commercial. That is the best use of the street in that regard. However, I don't believe that transportation and parking needs have been adequately addressed. The developer did try, but ultimately fell short on solar access. And it's out of scale with the surrounding neighborhood, does not meet the intent of the district plan. It could have been corrected. I note that Metro Measure 2611 said that we're not supposed to be putting more density than is required in neighborhoods than is required to meet our density goals. And this is something that I learned over the course of the last 20 years, that the urban growth boundary doesn't mean stuffing as much density everywhere. It means making sure we have livable neighborhoods that fit together. And in my opinion, this is not warranted. 85 feet at this particular location is going to look very out of place. I believe that this entire process, including the current motion to amend the comprehensive plan map designation, should have been done as part of the comprehensive plan discussions and not as a site-by-site decision. No.
Fish. Hales.
We have a lot of work to do to make our plan fit the ideal that you just described, Commissioner Fritz, which is we don't have to put density everywhere in the city, but we need to get that right legislatively up front. I think the challenge for the council in this case is that the combination of the special conditions, including requiring type 2 design review the changes in the massing of the property that we've already approved, I think give us some hope. The combination of the dialogue we heard and those specifications will get us to a cobbled together good outcome in this case. But I'm looking forward to getting the comp plan updated so that we don't have to cobble together many more cases in the future. Aye. Okay, now we're ready to move to regular agenda.
We actually have 2 minutes to go. I have 9:58. Is that correct?
I'm sorry?
I'm sorry. You're correct. We have a 10 o'clock time certain?
No, I don't think
yes.
Missed
yeah,
it.
We do. Okay.
There it is. You're right.
But it's not quite 10 o'clock.
Then let's take regular agenda and come back to it.
Okay.
About 669.
669 we can do.
669. Confirm appointment of Sam Hutchison as the fund administrator of the Fire and Police Disability and Retirement Fund.
Well, Sam is here this morning and I think has informally met members of the council. Please come on up. I'm not sure if there will be any questions for you here this morning. But we've gone through a very successful recruitment process, got some very strong candidates applying for this really important position to succeed. The very difficult to succeed Linda Jefferson as our fund administrator. Commissioner Saltzman and I participated in the final round of interviews with the finalists and have selected Sam to fill this important position. So thank you for your willingness to come into public service after a long career dealing with pension and disability issues on the private sector side. We think Sam's management experience and depth of understanding of pension and disability claims will be really helpful. The fact that he has had a background as an EMT and understands what police officers and firefighters do at a personal level, I think will serve him well. So I'm really looking forward to working with Sam and this really important responsibility for both our firefighters and our police officers and their families and their heirs, but also for the community and the taxpayers that pay for this very important part of our employee benefits system. So I don't know if there are any questions for Sam before we take action on the resolution this morning, but wanted to get him formally in front of the council and have him ready to go to work. Any questions? Then Sam, welcome. And anything you want to add this morning?
No, I think you did a good background, a good recall of my background. I'm looking forward to this. It is a change into the public sector, which is really exciting for me to make that kind of life and occupation change. So I'm looking forward to it. And following Linda will be quite an honor. She's done very well with the organization. I'm looking forward to taking it further. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Anyone else wants to testify on this item? Then a roll call on the resolution.
Saltzman.
Well, I want to welcome Sam to the city and to the big shoes you're filling of Linda Jefferson's as the director of the Fire Police Disability and Retirement Fund. There's a great staff there, and I know you will be very impressed with their commitment to making sure that citizens and beneficiaries of the Fire and Police Disability and Retirement Fund are well served. And so I look forward. Your background is outstanding and a really good fit for this job that you're, this very important job you're about to fill. So I'm pleased to vote aye.
Novick.
Thank you very much for being willing to take on this critical role. Aye.
Fritz.
This is a huge challenge, and I appreciate your willingness to serve. Aye.
Fish.
Mr. Hutchison, you're not the only person who formerly worked at the Standard who now works in this building. Jim Blackwood on my team was once, in the IT world. Thank you for your willingness to step up, and I think someone with your background and experience will be a great asset to the city, and we appreciate your willingness to take on this public service. Aye.
Hales.
Welcome aboard.
Thank you. Aye.
Thanks, Sam.
Thank you.
All right, now we should move back to our 10 a.m. time certain.
Item 659. Authorize agreements to facilitate sports field improvements and license agreement for Delta Park Sports Field Project.
Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you, Mayor. Good morning. Over a decade ago, the citizens of Portland committed to a 2020 vision for their park system, our park system, As part of that vision, there was a commitment to improve our sports fields, including converting existing grass sports fields to all-weather synthetic turf fields and adding lights at Delta Park. Due to weather conditions, including our famous rain, the existing grass sports field at Delta Park are closed for play for approximately 6 months a year, while the one existing all-weather sports field with lights is open year-round. In a public-private partnership with Portland Parks and Recreation, the Portland Timbers and Portland Thorns have agreed to make a financial commitment to offset most of the cost of adding a new synthetic field with lights and a building, which will include bathrooms, locker rooms, and program field support space at Delta Park. This field improvement will benefit all field users going forward with better playing surface, better amenities, including the restroom and changing facilities, and knowing that you're playing on the surface where the Thorns practice. Best of all, everyone will be able to play and practice in the rainy season. We're very pleased this morning to have representatives from the Timbers and Thorns football clubs who, after the presentation from Portland Parks, will come up and provide some remarks. However, first I must stop and give special recognition to Commissioner Fish, who did the lion's share of setting up this great event, and thank you for all of your hard work in support of community sports fields. This project is another shining example of your leadership, and I wonder if you'd like to have a few words.
Wow, I'm speechless.
All right, thanks.
Thank you. I will say this. I will say this. It's fitting that Todd Lofgren is the first person we'll be hearing from, because Todd has really pioneered the public-private partnership aspect of this with sports fields, and we would not be successful without great partners. So I want to again thank Todd for his work. And if you want to see what the impact of these fields is to a community, I would just say that last Saturday night I was at Buckman Fields, which was the last example of a conspicuous partnership that got us two world-class fields in the inner part of Portland. And there was a game between the Timbers U23 squad and the national team of Martinique. And about 1,000 people were there watching world-class soccer on a field that would not have been built had it not been for this partnership model that we're celebrating today. And I just felt so fortunate to live in a city that is Soccer City USA that has this kind of talent and has the fields to showcase the talent. So thank you, Commissioner Fritz, for continuing to champion this work. And I look forward to supporting your efforts to continue this model in other parts of our city.
Thank you. We'll now turn it over to Todd Lofgren, the Portland Parks Business Development Manager.
Good morning. My name is Todd Lofgren. I'm the Property and Business Development Manager for Portland Parks and Recreation. We're pleased to be here today to make another investment in our 2020 plan, improving community sports fields. I just want to give you a reminder. On May 29th, we were here to present to Portland City Council, of which we received approval to move forward with community sports users to replace three grass fields with synthetic turf and all weather or in lights. And that project is proceeding. The similar partner of Portland City United Soccer Club, Jeff Enquist and Dave Carbonaugh, who's been key partners in this. Jeff is in the audience today, so I want to thank Jeff for his support. And he also and his group will also be a partner in moving this fourth field forward. So today we're presenting a partnership between Portland Parks and Recreation and the Portland Timbers. We've identified mutually beneficial opportunities to construct this fourth field with lights and a building. As Commissioner Fritz has mentioned, it will include public restrooms, locker rooms that we'll be able to make to other sports users, and some field support programming space. The Portland Timbers will be using this for their youth development programs and academy programs, coaches training, as well as the Portland Thorns training. Portland Parks and Recreation will be making the facilities available to other sports user groups using the new field, using the locker rooms, and using the bathrooms. At the completion of this project, Delta Park will now have five all-weather synthetic turf fields with lights and will really put us on the map for not just local expanded use of our sports fields, but for regional and national tournaments, benefiting not just the city, all the businesses surrounding Delta Park. So we're very excited to take this step forward. Portland Parks and Recreation in this partnership will be investing $100,000 from Portland Parks and Recreation System Development Charge funds. as well as expending up to $25,000 of our design and construction staff to help oversee the project. The Portland Timbers will be contributing all the remaining funds, estimated today at $1.1 million. The ordinance will also authorize the Director of Parks and Recreation to execute the necessary use agreements and development agreements to accomplish the goals of this project. And finally, this ordinance will approve the operation and maintenance funds to care for the field and the building at the completion of the project. We will be coming back to Portland, to the City Council, once we have a finalized O&M estimate for the building. We're requesting that this ordinance be approved today as an emergency ordinance so this project can proceed during the current construction season. So thank you for having me today, and we're proud to bring this to you today. I think Commissioner Fritz would like to introduce the rest of our guests here today.
Thank you. Does anybody have any questions for Todd?
Great work. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yes, really excellent work. May I have our guests from the Timbers and the Thorns to come forward, please? We had some last-minute changes, so I want to make sure that we get the right folks.
I'm going to slide up another chair. Oh, there. Thanks, Todd. Great. Got one for you. Good morning.
Somebody who's on the wait list for the Timbers season tickets and a proud Thorn season ticket holder. I'm very excited to see you all here. Just turn it over to Mike Gollop, and then you can each introduce yourself. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. Good morning. We're very pleased to be here on this occasion. When we embarked on our efforts to bring Major League Soccer to Portland 4+ years ago, we made a commitment internally as an organization, but also to the community, that we would invest our resources and our effort and our platform to grow the sport of soccer at every level. And thanks largely to Gavin's leadership over the last 2.5 years, we've done just that. We now help administer the Youth Soccer Association, the OYSAA, throughout the state. We run the Olympic Development Program for boys and girls. We've started an elite academy for boys under 16 and under 18. We run more than 100 camps for kids of all ages and abilities throughout the state. We have regional training centers throughout the state. And this year, thanks to support of season ticket holders like Commissioner Fritz and players like Rachel Buehler, we launched the Thorns to a resounding success, and only Major League Soccer team to take a women's team in the new women's league. This effort that Todd described and that Commissioner Fritz described allows us to take these efforts to a new level. It gives us a permanent home, and the ongoing private-public partnership that we have with the city around Jugland Field has been an unequivocal success, at least in our point of view, and we think that this partnership will be the same. I wanted to now throw it over to Gavin to describe what he envisions happening at this field that's been described.
So, good morning, and again, thank you very much. Just to reiterate what Todd did state, a big thank you to Jeff Enquist and Dave Carbono, and honestly, Todd has been phenomenal throughout this project, making himself available to us on a regular basis, answering questions in a timely manner and giving us information as we requested. So thank you very much. Our vision for the state and for the youth game in general is for the Timbers to be at the forefront of everything that happens in soccer. I think with the leadership that we have with Merit, the level of investment, the quality people that we have on staff, and the impact that we can have over soccer in general, is phenomenal. So the more that we can do for the youth, the more players that we can get playing the game, I think it's of tremendous benefit, not only to the Timbers and Thorns and hopefully everlasting fans as such, but also to just the activity levels of young players coming through schools, coming through high schools, and giving them role models at the highest level. One of the things that has held us back has been fields, the availability of fields, the access that we have to those fields to get some of our players out working with young players, to have those individuals working with young players that can be of benefit to everybody, both the Timbers and Thorns, but also the young players that are involved. And a project like this enables us to take the game one step closer to where we see it going. Mike did reference, we have formed a very strong partnership with the OYSA. We are trying to get everybody back on one level playing field as such within the state of Oregon, instead of having youth soccer being fractured in many, many ways. We're trying to lead everybody in what we see as the right direction. Only time will tell if that is the right direction, but we believe in it. And this project, where it is a partnership between the Portland Parks and Rec and City and the Portland Timbers, is I see as being a phenomenal one. We can train our academy there at hours that you generally wouldn't use for, you know, young players being developed. We do have greater access to fields and players, and when we use the field for the Thorns in the morning, at the moment we're struggling for a facility where we can actually house the Thorns, make them feel a strong part of our community and a strong part of the organization. And a project like this enables us to keep a Thorns team both happy, keep them developing, and also bring on more quality players and a strong part of the soccer environment. So from my standpoint, it adds not only to this soccer generation, but many soccer generations to come. So thank you very much. I appreciate it. And I'd like to make two introductions to very important people. First, we have Rachel Bueller, who's on the U.S. Women's National Team. And that's secondary to being on the Thorns, by the way. But she's one of our star players with the Thorns, a tremendous person, tremendous player. I'll let her speak in a second. But I'll also introduce David Horst, who is one of our star central defenders, who's having a bit of a year off at the moment. And he was a full-time player. Now we say he's a full-time rehab person. So suffered a nasty injury in coming back, but he'll be back mid-September on the playing field. So, Rachel.
Yeah, I just wanted to say thank you for having us here today. Playing for the Thorns this season has been an absolutely incredible experience. I'm new to Portland, and I heard it was a soccer city, but this is just more than I ever expected. And the community support that we've felt is incredible, and that type of, you know, enthusiasm for soccer here in Portland is exciting for us as players, and also makes us just want to help develop the sport even more. And I think that this field renovation at Delta Park is a great opportunity for that, not only to provide a place for us to train, you know, on a regular basis and, you know, continue to further our game, but for the general community as well. I mean, it would provide fields year-round with great amenities that the entire community could really enjoy. So I'm very excited about this.
Rachel, I just have one comment. We at the beginning of the...
I thought you were speechless, Nick.
At the beginning of the season, the council had the honor of welcoming the Thorns, and we had two players, Danny and Christine, came in. Mm-hmm. And I arranged with Mike to buy one of the jerseys, which was not inexpensive. And I wore it to the next game with my daughter. And everywhere I went in the stadium, people were staring at me. And I instinctively thought it was because they had gotten a leaked news about me becoming the new water and sewer commissioner. And so I felt that was had raised my profile. But I actually finally asked someone in my family, you know, why are we getting so much attention? And I realized it's because it actually had not come out yet for sale. So I was wearing the jersey, and other than the ladies on the field wearing jerseys, I was the only other one. So it was a thrill to wear it, and it was a thrill to get it from Christine Sinclair, and it has been a thrill to watch the women, outstanding women on the field. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Thank you for all the support. Again, it's incredible playing in Portland.
That's great. Good morning. Slide over a little bit.
I'll
pick you up.
Yeah, be careful.
Well, thanks for having us this morning. But, you know, when I was growing up as a young soccer player, parks and projects like this were very vital to my development as a player, first of all, but also as a person and interacting with, you know, other people. You know, I made some of my best friends growing up, you know, playing at parks like this. And as a remaining member of the inaugural MLS season here in Portland, I'm very excited to give back to this community, to the best fan base in the country. So it's very excited to be a part of that.
It's great.
Thank you all very much for being here.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And I just have to note that a couple of weeks ago, I happened to pick up a copy of USA Today, which, by the way, is a highly underrated paper with a great sports section. And I was leafing through the sports section, and there was a huge article about the Portland Timbers and how if Major League Soccer could bottle and sell the kind of fan excitement that the Timbers have generated, the entire league would explode. And it was hilarious. I mean, you can't even sit down and read a national newspaper without seeing something about the Timbers. You're inescapable.
Thank you very much.
I think the Thorns haven't had a home attendance of under 10,000 yet, and they were recently playing somebody who was so excited that they got 4,000 people there. So actually, for me, watching the live stream, and incidentally, to the Timbers organization, my daughter was not able to attend one of the recent games because she had some surgery, and she said that the live stream is so much better from Geldwin than it is from the other fields. But even with a very poor live stream, you can see that the Thorns are playing on surfaces that are so much better here than you are in other places. And what, as you mentioned, it's going to be so great for our youth to be playing on those surfaces too and to feel that they're part of this great Soccer City USA. So thank you so much, all of you, for coming in.
Thanks very much.
Thank you. Do you have anyone else signed up?
That's all we had invited. Does anybody want to testify on this issue?
Oh, we had one sign up, and that's Lightning.
Morning. Welcome back.
My name is Lightning. I just have a couple concerns I wanted to try to address here. I have a real problem with understanding a city that has a general budget of approximately, $400 million, and yet in this agreement we have a insurance policy on each occurrence that may happen of only $1 million to $2 million. In my opinion, that's just extremely too low. There's going to be a great deal more people brought to this location. There's a chance for more things to happen. And I think that the insurance really needs to be reviewed, and at the very minimum should be around $5 million. I think what you currently have in this agreement is far too low. And again, that's just my opinion. Another issue I have on the option, and I'll just go by memory on this agreement, is that the option expires upon when the turf has no useful life. And I find that an interesting definition because we have a warranty on the turf that goes to 8 years. And what happens after that 8-year warranty expires? Who's going to be responsible for that additional cost?
And Lightning, I think... Can I just address that?
Yes, you
because
can.
Because I want to showcase something that Commissioner Fritz led in this agreement that's very innovative.
Sure.
There's actually a sinking fund in this deal where money will be set aside to actually cover the replacement of the field. And that is addressing a chronic problem we have in all of our bureaus of not having the money to replace an asset once it's gotten to the useful life. So I want to compliment Commissioner Fritz that in this deal money will be set aside for the possibility of a replacement at the end of the useful life of this field.
And I guess my point would be is why not try to extend the warranty to the term of the option might be another avenue to go, because why just set aside funds that might come from another location when you can have a warranty cover that cost? That's just my point being made. Another issue I have is after the expiration of this agreement, they go into an automatic option mode again to renew. And I think that basically extending that much time is not to the advantage of the city. What happens if somebody steps forward and says, hey, I want to place a bid to buy the whole property? That limits you for many, many years on what you're going to do with this property. And again, who's to say that this company that's currently going into this agreement will be in existence in 10 years? Nobody really knows that. And there's no buyout provisions on this in the event that we want to buy them out sooner on this option. So, again, I just have a few concerns on this that I think this is extended out too many years. And after, say, 8 to 10 years, if we're not happy, do we have a right to back out of this agreement? Or do they just automatically go into the next phase? So that's just my concern I have. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else signed up to testify?
No.
Then it's an emergency ordinance. We'll take a roll call.
Salzman.
Well, I want to thank Portland Parks and Recreation, Commissioner Fish, Commissioner Fritz, the Portland Timbers. This is an outstanding partnership, and we really appreciate the Timbers and the Thorns stepping up here to make such important investments in youth development, not to mention better practice facilities for the Timbers and Thorns. But the Timbers have made such an impressive commitment to our community. It's really, it's been my pleasure to observe how the excitement has built in this town for soccer at the professional level, in men and women's soccer, and as I and also just the outstanding corporate citizen that the Portland Timbers organization has become. They've lived up to all their commitments in my mind that we talked about when we made decisions to partner with them to renovate Geldwin Park into an outstanding professional soccer facility. So thank you all. Please to vote aye.
Novick.
I'm looking forward to seeing more public-private partnerships with a ratio of private to public funds of 11 to 1. Thank you very much to all involved. Aye.
Fritz.
It just to reiterate, the Timbers and Peregrine and Delta Development are putting in $1.1 million into this field, building the field. We're putting in $100,000. So it's a huge payback to our community and a recognition that indeed the fans are supporting both the Timbers and the Thorns in record numbers. I do thank Mike Gullop, the Chief Operating Officer, General Manager Gavin Wilkerson, wonderful defender Rachel Bueller, and Timbers defender David Horst, also absolutely fantastic, and we hope you get better soon. You'll find that here in Portland, if you haven't already, that people know us on the council by our first names. We're Charlie and Steve and Amanda and Nick and Dan, and people know you. I think in sports, often because the name on your back is your last name, you're known by that, but we know you as Karina and Becky and all of the great role models that by partnering on this field, you are and playing on this field where our kids from all over the metro area are going to play as well. I think it just takes it to a whole new level, and it certainly has exceeded my hopes when the original Geldwin Stadium deal was done. And since we weren't expecting all the ticket taxes from the Thorns when we did that deal, I'm very, very happy with that, too, because you are. And actually, the Timbers Army and the Rosie the Riveters, the Thorns Riveters, are exemplifying the best in soccer fans rather than the soccer hooligans that I'll be going home to in a couple of days, traditionally soccer fans have not been known as pillars of the community. And in the United States, but particularly in Portland, they have embraced that they want to give back to the community and are doing so in so many different ways. And that's a very Portland thing, and I appreciate it. Thanks to everybody. Aye.
Fish.
I want to start by just saying to my friend, Commissioner Fritz, You brought this home, and you drove a very hard bargain. And I am so grateful that you share the passion of the rest of us for providing great opportunities for kids on world-class pitches. And this field will be used for all sports, not just soccer. But you brought this home, and congratulations, and thank you. And I will remind people watching that the public investment here is actually systems development charge money. So it's not out of our general fund. It's money paid by developers to cover the cost of the impact of development on our community. And I think it's a very appropriate allocation of SDC funds. When I saw our national team player here today, I was reminded of one of the benefits that we take for granted of having national team players here, which is when the national team played an exhibition game, they invited the Broncos from Park Rose, the women's soccer team, to escort them onto the field. There's a picture in my office of a young woman who's having practically a heart attack getting an autograph from Megan Rapinoe, and the look on her face, and it was a cover picture of the Oregonian. And it's just one of the many benefits of having world-class players in our community. And we are so grateful and fortunate to have Rachel and people of her quality on the team. I just want to observe that starting with Buckman Field and the Grant Field and now Delta Park, we are slowly fulfilling the 2020 goal of having these year-round pitches for sports. And the reason we do so is they cost less to maintain, there are fewer injuries, and the world is moving to these all-weather fields. But the fields that are coming into our community are the best of the best. These are the best all-weather fields in the country, and it's just, to me, extraordinarily gratifying that they'll be used by both elite professional players but also be available to young people like my son. And finally, Mayor, I just want to note that as a longtime soccer dad that used to have to travel to Seattle or south on I-5 to get to world-class facilities like what Commissioner Fritz is building in Delta Park, there is a larger vision here, because when all of these fields are turfed, and we have the opportunity to compete for those regional tournaments and West Coast tournaments, which are a big deal across sports, that will have an amazing impact on our community and, frankly, will help jumpstart some economic activity in Jansen Beach. And a number of those hotels, which have not always fared so well, are now in prime locations where families can rent a room and then walk to the field. I hope in the not-too-distant time we are the premier venue for these events. And to Lightning's comment, we will never consider selling Delta Park or any of those fields to any private entity. This is a public trust. And what Commissioner Fritz is doing today is fulfilling a commitment we made in a 2020 vision and moving toward the day when we will have a world-class regional facility in that part of our community. And that's not only great for youth sports, it's phenomenally good for the local economy. So again, congratulations and thank you. And thanks to our partners for helping to make it happen. Aye.
Hales.
Oh, by the way, I would be remiss. I would be remiss, since her mother came up to me the other day, if I didn't acknowledge Krista Torres, who's here, the pride of the Connecticut women's soccer team, 2000 Oregon Woman Soccer Player of the Year, and most importantly, a member of the Portland Parks Board and a great contributor to our local community. Krista, thank you, and your mom sends her regards.
You're here.
And Hales.
Wow, what a great project and a great partnership and great leadership from members of this council and from a sports organization that's really stepping up. You know, I think you can count the benefits of these kinds of partnerships in quantifiable ways, and some of them have been mentioned here, the amazing leverage of your very large contribution to a relatively modest one from the public treasury, the number of kids that will play, the number of successes that this will lead to for the Thorns and the Timbers. And all those are real numbers and real good things. I think it also leads to things that we don't quite see yet, like how our growing sports and apparel economy here in Portland will be augmented by the fact that we are a greater and greater soccer city, and it will lead to connections and opportunities that we can't even see from here, but we'll celebrate at some other day here. But I think the best thing about this is just the relationship between this sports organization and this community and how genuine it is and how populist it is. And I love that tone, and I love this example of why that works so well for not just the sports organization and not just the city's coffers, but for kids and families across the city. It's wonderful. Thank you very much. Aye.
Mayor, could we just get a photograph?
We sure can.
Could all of our guests come up? And Todd, could you come up too, please?
That's fun. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, you're moving him up.
He's, yeah, he'll play tonight.
That was just too much fun. All right. I think we have a couple of regular agenda items remaining.
Item 670, approve fiscal year 2013-14 cost of living adjustments to pay rates for non-represented classifications and elected officials, specify the effect upon employees and the classifications involved, and provide for payment.
Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Elizabeth Nunes, and I'm the class comp manager in the Bureau of Human Resources, and I'm here to present the ordinance to apply a cost of living adjustment to all non-represented and elected officials in the amount of 0.9%. This may look a little confusing because of the effective dates. For the majority of non-represented classifications and elected officials, this change occurs January 1st, 2014. So there's just one non-represented group whose structure changes effective July 1, 2013. And that is the seasonal classifications. So this doesn't apply necessarily to individual employees. It's just that group of classifications. The structure moves up 0.9% effective July 1 of this year.